Raglan Community Radio supports the Code of Broadcasting Practice for the broadcasts of its radio programs. If you hear something you find offensive or intentionally misleading on our station, you have the right to complain. A formal complaint about a specific program or incident must be made within 20 days of broadcast of that program to Raglan Community Radio, PO Box 126, Raglan.
Money 8.1, Raglan Community Radio.
All right, now we're going to turn to our community board chairperson, Dennis Amor. Morning, Dennis.
Morning, Aaron.
So we've got, lots of bad weather. Is the weather interfering with any council construction projects, or it's not that big of a deal?
No, it's not that big of a deal. Most of the things that have been going on seem to be progressing without any hassle from the weather.
I had thought the wee nearer walkway, they'd said that the job would be completed by this month, but was I wrong about that, or have there been delays in getting the railing?
I haven't walked that way for a while.
It's been a week since I was down there, but the fence was still
My up. Understanding was it's going to be finished by the end of August. But if it's not finished, it will be. It's not sourcing the rail. It's getting all the rail anodized or something, or paint and that sort of thing that had to be done. So it can't be far away if it's not finished. But I thought it was meant to be finished. Certainly was meant to be finished by the end of September.
How many construction
August?
How many construction projects do you know that actually finish on the date?
Oh, there have been a few.
Where
you've got external things that force basically staying on program.
Yeah, it depends how big the punishment is, I guess, or if there is one.
Yeah, if you've got liquidated damages to deal with if you overrun and various things like that. So,
well, that's for big, crucial infrastructure projects. Yep, there is no consequence to not having the railing because we've got a temporary railing. So I guess it's just a question I sometimes think about. I'm used to that in the construction industry. Most projects seem to overrun. Do I make a song and dance about it, or do we just accept that that's life?
Well, it depends why it overruns and depends whether there's an increase in cost in the fact that it has overrun, or whether you've got a lump sum contract and it's not going to cost you any more and it's not an inconvenience to anyone.
Yeah.
So there's a few issues that crop up there. You know, if you take the work that's going to happen at Papahua with the stormwater drainage and things like that, if that's still all open at Christmas time, then, yeah, you've got a huge problem because it's probably going to cost them revenue and things like that. So that job is planned to be finished at the end of November with the pumps being installed in the first week of December.
So have you looked over the plans for that project? Oh, were you on the decision-making group?
Yeah, I was involved in the tender award or discussion on the tender and that sort of thing. I have only had a cursory look at the plans because we didn't need to look at the detail of the design or anything as part of that exercise. But a contract has been awarded, and they should have what's the date today? Sixth
today. Yep.
Yeah. So they should have mobilised on site on Tuesday or Wednesday. So there should be some gear sitting over there and some temporary fencing starting to happen. So things should be starting to move.
And so generally, what is happening with that project?
Well, basically, it's a stormwater upgrade to try and stop all the flooding that historically they've had in the camping ground. With some additional work to really alleviate the flooding on the soccer fields as well.
Yes.
So there's drainage pipes going in and a pumping station going in.
Okay, where's the pump station going in? Which part of the... sorry, I know this field too well, so I want to know exactly where the pump's going.
I would have to look at the design to know exactly where it's going, but I think it's on sort of in the area of the interface between the soccer field and the camping ground in that area, but don't quote me without me having a look at the plans or talking to Richard.
One of the problems that was noticed over the last few years was that there was a pump by where the BMX track is.
Yeah, yeah,
there was a little sump in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was bigger than it had been. But the problem with that was that it was on the same electrical circuit as the lights that light up the tree by the changing rooms, and people were always smashing the lights and then breaking the circuit, and then the pump didn't work for sometimes weeks at a time. So I'm curious, and you said you haven't looked at that much detail, but whether that problem is going to be solved as part of this?
It's off a totally different circuit. Off supplies from within the camping ground.
Okay, well, as someone who spent years and years trying to get council staff in the campground to take that issue seriously and explain that you can't just stop the flooding at the campground and the water, you know, the water in the soccer fields doesn't care there's a fence there, it just goes on through. I am pleased to hear that this is happening.
Yeah, well, let's hope it does resolve, meets the outcomes that everyone's expecting, in which case, yeah, it should make that a lot, alleviate some of that problem in the wintertime.
Yeah, and since we got the soccer fields to talk about, there's the, what's it called, the Places and Spaces consultation. So this is about any council thing, like a park or a library or toilets, that we want to make comment on at the moment?
Well, it's... Yeah, I went on it the other day because it's an interactive thing and you click on the reserve you want to comment on, or the park, and I sort of wanted to make some comments about the soccer fields and about Wainua Reserve development and things like that, but you can't actually, like, it doesn't include Wainua Reserve. It only seems to include things like the rugby field or that type of thing, so...
I didn't try, because I made a comment on the Papahua part of the map, but I didn't try at Wainua Reserve.
Yeah, I found I couldn't. Maybe it's my lack of skill.
It's pretty easy to use, Dennis. I don't think it's you.
So, people might go on there and have a play with it and make comments if they want to.
Yeah, we've got, I think tomorrow is the last day, is it?
Or is it? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's stopping really soon.
There is a separate exercise being done by council to look at sports fields within the Ragland area.
Last day. It could be today, I think, actually. It could be the last day.
Okay, well, you got the end till the end of the day then.
Yeah, I actually admire the way they've done it, and that it's really easy for a casual person to make a comment, but not many people have casually turned up and made comments, unfortunately. And I wonder if people need to see some firm plans and then they react to those plans before you get much feedback.
Yeah, or are we marketing it incorrectly and that we're not getting a wide enough audience seeing that the opportunities available?
I feel like we haven't done enough to promote it, although we did when it opened, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe there's an issue there as well that we need to address. But like I was going to say, separately there's a exercise going on looking at sports fields and that side of thing in Ragland and the demand and what the growth demand will be. And where are other opportunities to build a sports field? So, you know...
How far ahead is it looking at? How many years ahead does it look?
I believe it's looking sort of 30 or 40 years ahead.
Okay, good. Yeah.
So, you know, it's looking at, say, the rugby fields and saying, well, you know, we're going to have coastal inundation that's going to flood those. Do we need to relocate them at some point in time where we're going to relocate them to?
Yeah.
And there is an exercise being done on that by the Parks and Open Spaces team and that... Because they have in discussions with them the other day, they did admit that we have an issue that, you know, going forward, Ragland is under-resourced in sports fields at the present time, be they indoor or outdoor ones. So,
yes, okay.
The issue from that is, if we relocate them, and you and I have talked about the soccer field several times, is where do we relocate them to, and is Wainua Reserve an opportunity for that?
It's an easy fix because the land already exists under council ownership. So,
yeah,
and some of it is under a treaty claim, but a lot of it isn't. So,
yeah, and then we run into once we start doing that, and the discussion with open spaces then led on to what's happening with the disposal fields for the wastewater system and things like that. And it sounds like Wainua Reserve is becoming the number one priority area for that.
But wouldn't that work? So, well, wouldn't that water and fertilise the fields if it was done right?
Well, it depends where they're going to dispose of it and what the implications of that are. So there's a few other things then creep into it. So we just, be interesting to see what open spaces come up with.
Okay, so, all right. I mean, the finding flat land is challenging around our area. Like Te Uku is kind of, when I try to think of some flat land, aside from the reserve and close to the water, it's Te Uku, isn't it?
Yeah, you've got flat land at Karawa and things like that. But, yeah, then you start getting a long way away, you know.
Yeah, which is exactly my point. Yeah,
you need to be able to jump on your push bike, and or if you're young guys, jump on your push bike and pedal there.
I've got to admit,
kick a ball around and do whatever.
Papahua is good like that. Like when I was coaching, the kids would just walk down from the area school, and the kids who came from the younger ones who came from Tamata and Tiuku on the bus, they were dropped off by the library, walk across the bridge, and the fields are right there. So it did work beautifully in that regard.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, and it was, but there's always been this issue with Papahua that it's like not technically it's not really council land, it's kind of dock land, but kind of not. Like it was in this kind of hazy grey area, and it's been always been really hard to get investment in that area. And like last weekend, I was up at my daughter's soccer game in Auckland at Ellerslie Soccer Club, and they've got this fantastic, beautiful new complex. Yeah. And I was saying to my wife, I said, "In Raglan, we have an old shipping container." That's the comparison.
Yeah, exactly.
And I know they're a big club with thousands of people, but the fact that there's still only a single shipping container at Papahua and under-resourcing, hopefully that comes up, that discussion comes up too.
Well, hopefully, talking with Matthew, or with the Open Spaces team, they're hoping to have that completed before Christmas.
Okay, well, I look forward to reading that.
Yep.
Going over it with a fine-tooth comb.
I'm sure you will.
We were talking before about construction projects around town. The wharf ramp, that's been renewed. How's that?
They've done one half of it. The second half, and I think it was 14 days or 21 days after that was done, they were going to then start preparing for the second half.
Oh, they have to let the concrete harden.
Yeah, they need to let the concrete cure. So hopefully that can't be that far away from doing the second half, and then that'll obviously have to cure for 2 to 3 weeks. And then it'll be fully available to everyone.
Seems like a fairly simple project, that one.
Yeah, it is a reasonably straightforward project. There's been quite a bit of interaction with the various stakeholders that use it and that sort of thing. That's gone reasonably well. It's progressing well.
Okay. The Manu Bay breakwall, I don't imagine there's much news on that, but I just want to check in because we've had there's a decision to be made out of those five potential solutions, aren't there?
Yeah, a decision's been made by someone in council, and the report is going to the infrastructure committee. And from what I've read, basically they've decided that because the stakeholders can't agree on a solution, that they've decided that they'll do nothing. Which, unfortunately, is something that really does worry me because. If I read what I read correctly, and the decision's been made on the basis that stakeholders can't agree, then I don't think they've been honest with themselves, to be honest.
The issue we've got is we've got a fishing club that needs one set of things, and we've got the surf club that wants something else, and they're a little bit opposed. And so it's going to be very hard to get agreement between two parties in that situation. And isn't it the council's job to be the parent, if you will?
Well, it is, and to me, it's a risk analysis for decision as far as I can work out. You know, do you determine is the boat ramp? Council own the asset, so therefore they've got to determine whether the asset in the present condition is safe or not.
Which we're pretty sure it's not.
Yeah, and then they've got to work through the process of if it's not safe, how unsafe is it, and is it a minor risk or is it a major risk?
But shouldn't that have happened already?
Well, it would have, but when you read the document I read, the decision seems to be made on the fact that the stakeholders couldn't agree, which is completely bloody idiotic.
Is that some of the pressure on the council budget at the moment sort of showing through there? Like, here's a chance to not spend money?
I don't. There's another example, exactly the same thing, where we're trying to get access through the Wainuiri Reserve to connect the bike way. Mountain bike, so people can bike from Raglan right out to and onto the reserve.
Oh yeah,
and go to the end of where the footpath's been widened to 2 meters, then go through the reserve and up through there. And I met with the Open Spaces group this week. They'd had a meeting with the Wainuiri Reserve people, and they don't want them to go through the reserve. So the council has decided that that's too hard as well.
So they met. They basically met one stakeholder group.
Yeah.
And not the others.
Well, I think the bike guys were there as well.
Okay.
But, you know, because one group says it's too hard, they decide they're not going to proceed. And it seems to be a bit of a trend. I'm seeing a bit of a trend. And so at the end of the day, we need to decide whether we're going to be a progressive bloody council or we're minority groups are going to dictate what happens.
Is that if you behave aggressively enough, the council staff back down?
It would appear that way.
Yeah. Well, that, I mean, and that's kind of, I don't know if this is accurate, but I kind of feel like it's your guys' job as the political representatives to get in the middle of that and try and, I think the staff should be protected from something like community horrible to people. Like, I've seen it. And abusive behaviour is not acceptable in any circumstances, but by the same token, you've got to have a solution to that.
Yeah, well, we've got to come to a solution. So, you know, I've said to them that I want to go out there with the council parks and guys and see what the options are.
Yeah.
And then we all have to make a decision, you know. We'll try and meet some of the needs of the Wainua Reserve people. But if we can't, then, or it's going to be very expensive to do something alternative, then, yeah, some hard decisions will need to be made. After all, it is council land.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll wait and see on that one. Civil defence issues, have we got, there's something in this agenda, isn't there? Because we've got a community board meeting next Wednesday. I didn't mention that at the top, but...
At Tiuku too, by the way.
At Tiuku, right. So on your bikes?
Yeah, on your bikes. No, don't walk, we'll ride.
Get someone
to give you a ride.
State Highway 23 is really not that flash for biking.
No, it's not. It's in fact, it can be quite frustrating because until you I've come up behind a bike, someone's cycling pretty far at times, and when you're doing 100K and they're doing whatever they are, 20K, you do come up on them pretty quick. And, you know, you've got to take evasive action sometimes because not all of them are on the very side of the road.
It's not a place, like, I wouldn't let my kids bike from there. We knew some people just out of town, and I did the bike ride myself once. I was like, no, you guys are not doing that.
Yeah,
just not safe. Yeah, and I know, and it's all right for adults to make that choice. But anyway,
civil defence.
So yeah, that's what we were talking about.
The civil defence plan's coming up for ratification at the community board meeting, and then we're looking at getting a team of people together in about the first or second week of October to sort of try and see who wants to fill what roles. So Raglan Radio should get an email or something from us soon saying, "Hey, we're planning this meeting." And try and get all the interested parties together and sit down and see who will fill what roles and how we can sort of put a team together to be able to lead that in the case of an emergency.
Are you still interested in hearing from just people in the community who might want to participate?
Well, if there's someone there with some skills in the right areas, certainly.
Yeah.
Wouldn't never turn anyone down. And that sort of thing, but we've sort of identified the people that are sort of running responsible for the various halls, for example.
Yeah.
Get them along so that they know what would be required, but we still need someone to look after comms, someone to look after logistics and various things like that. So if people got skills in those types of areas, then yeah, certainly interested.
Okay, all right. So that's coming up. What was I going to talk about? Oh, the Greenslade Road Playground. Is there any update on that at all?
I believe the design's being done at the present time. I haven't had any feedback when the installation's going to happen.
Yeah.
One would like to think they can get the design done and get it installed prior to Christmas, but hey, who knows?
Yeah. Let's talk about that, back to the civil defence, the power outage, which caused the cell phones to come down. And I know on the daytime, we had this conversation already, during that one day, that's not a big deal to lose your cell phone. But the issue that I thought, the background to it for me is Cyclone Gabrielle, when the government said we can't talk to anyone in that whole region, like we've lost contact with that whole region. In this day and age, that was fairly sobering during an emergency like that. And the issue was that the private phone companies, they have battery backups for 4 to 8 hours typically in their cell phone towers, and then after that, nothing.
Right.
And there was discussion like, oh, we need to change that. But obviously what we learned the other day was that hasn't changed.
Right, yep.
So, I mean, I guess there's a lesson for people when there's a civil defence emergency, you can't rely on your phones.
Well, I guess that's a reality, really. You know, like I said, when you sent an email out on the subject, I basically hadn't even noticed my cell phone wasn't working. But then I don't use mine a hell of a, you know, as much as a lot of people do. But I think yeah, it's whether the likes of Chorus Telecom and various outfits, one NZ now I think they're called, are actually looking at making their systems more robust so that, you know, they'll have 24-hour cover or something like that.
They're not, because I asked about, because I specifically, okay. I messaged Spark's media team and I was like, what's happening? And they said, well, we are looking at upgrading the cell phone tower up by the water tower, but that was just part of their normal program of reviewing their equipment every few years. So it wasn't because they thought, oh, we need to have 24 hours of cell phone. It was
battery
just
cover.
It was just 4 to 8, which turned into 1 to 2 in reality.
Yeah, and I can understand to a certain extent, because once they start putting batteries in, that, you know, with 24, they can cover 24-hour loss of power and things like that, then there's a whole lot of other maintenance issues and maintaining those and things like that as well. I don't know what the solution is. I guess councils, I would imagine, and I'll talk to Scott, whether they have satellite phones that they can use during those periods to get communications between different areas, which would work.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be, it'd have to be something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Now, we had a chat before we went on the air, because there was an item that came up in the news a couple of weeks ago about local government in New Zealand suggesting a bed tax for councils to cope with, and it's an issue for Raglan because we have so many Airbnbs and so many tourists coming through and tourists using our infrastructure, but the people paying for the infrastructure are only the ratepayers in our small communities. I know the community board doesn't get a big say about this, but would the community board be interested in discussing the idea of a bed tax, should I put it that way?
I guess it's a difficult one. It's the big issue for me with the bed tax is how do you actually police it? How do you collect the revenue?
Yeah.
And we're seeing the issue of taxes associated with Bukabatch and Airbnb raised recently, and that Airbnb, for example, now want all your tax numbers, and they're collecting that on behalf of the government, I believe.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. They would have to have a bed tax, they would have to get them on board. They would then have to collect the money, and then that money, one would hope, would then become available to that associated community.
Yes.
You wouldn't want to see it go into New Zealand government coffers, or you wouldn't want to see it go into a big pool in Waikato District Council coffers either. You'd want to think that if it's being raised from a bed tax that's in Raglan, that money goes back into infrastructure within Raglan.
Yeah, which is specifically the problem. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, there's been a lot of discussion over the years, and there's been a lot of negative feedback on it. People that have got Airbnbs and the likes don't really want it. I guess at the end of the day, it'll push up the price. Because people that have got an Airbnb will just add it on to the price. So
yeah, well, I would call it shifts the cost over to away from me to the tourists, basically.
Yeah.
If I'm looking from a purely selfish point of view.
And it's again comes back to then how much is administrative cost going to be compared to about how much revenue we actually get out of it.
Well, you'd hope with a computer system, once you get it set up and running, that everything would just flow. I know the world doesn't seem to work like that, but
no, I know.
But we do have problems caused by, like, not people who have a back room that they're renting out as an Airbnb, but houses that get taken out of the normal residential pool and turned into Airbnbs. Certainly that's coincided with us not having spare rental properties in town, for instance.
Yeah, that was what they were saying a couple of years ago. I don't know how many houses in Raglan are purely Airbnb. I've never done an exercise as against how many are just a room or an attachment to a house where people are living that have got an Airbnb attached. Like, you know, we lease ours out some few times a year, but it's a granny flat attached to our house. And even if we weren't using it on Airbnb from time to time, we certainly wouldn't be renting it because basically it's there for family to use when they want to.
Yeah, so you only put it on Airbnb when your family aren't using it.
Yeah, basically, yeah. It's never on Airbnb on school holidays, for example, which might seem weird because that's probably when you're going to make most of your money, but it's also when all our family use it.
Well, yeah, it's not just about making money, obviously.
It's
a family situation. Yeah, I only brought this up because it was in the national news. Local government New Zealand were doing something about it. I hear, everyone talks about how there's problems here with the housing, as there is in a lot of communities. But I don't hear a lot of constructive solutions being proposed in the community. At least this was an idea that we could look at.
Yeah, I get, well, you know, for me, it should be easily collected because Airbnb are doing it for tax purposes now, yeah, for the government. So they should be able to do it easy enough and implement it easy enough. It's just that, for me, it'd be making sure the money comes back to the community, and then what sort of charge do you have that doesn't discourage people from coming to Raglan, because they don't just use the infrastructure, they also spend a hell of a lot of money in the community.
Yeah.
You know, everyone that I've had, but 99% of people probably I could say that stay in Airbnb don't cook there. They always go out for a meal,
yeah,
and that sort of thing. So money is being spent in the community while they're here.
Yeah, I guess it's about addressing those imbalances. I did ask Lisa about this. It might have been off the air, but she said that some of the councillors were opposed to the idea.
Okay.
And her comment was kind of like, you want to try living where we live and see the effect it has before you say that. Those were not her words, but
yeah,
that was kind of what she was saying to them, yeah. Hey, folks, we're talking to our community board chairperson, Dennis Amor. Dennis, is there any other stuff you've been up to in the last little while since we last spoke to you?
No, those are the main things.
All those projects.
I guess there are a couple of things out for consultation, like you said.
Oh, yes.
The places on parks and reserves is out and closes today, so people need to feedback into that.
Yeah, and it's really easy, folks. Not many people have taken advantage of it, but this is early consultation. I hear people say, oh, once the council is consulting and they've written their stuff up, they really don't want to change it. And there's an element of truth to that, but this is consulting before they've written stuff up. So it really is a good time. So get onto the council website and look for places and spaces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably the other thing that's been going on, there's a bit of talk about, we've been doing a bit of work with open spaces and with fees and charges. Open spaces, we're looking to try and have a designated overflow car park that's open at Wainui Reserve. So it'll be open Thursday through to Sunday.
For summertime.
Right through the whole of the summer.
Yeah.
And then from just before Christmas to Waitangi, it'll be open 7 days a week and just left open. So that'd be sort of looking at the parking area and the amphitheatre. We do lose it for a couple of weeks because of sound splash, but I'm sort of requesting that we have an alternative location up there for overflow parking, because each year it gets worse and worse.
And there is plenty of room up there.
Yeah, there's plenty of room for parking. They've just got to open it up and get the gates open and let people park on the grass at that time of the year. It's not a problem.
Sorry, I'm having problems with silences this evening. You've been listening to Dennis Amor, Chair of the Community Board, talking to Aaron, I think it was on Friday. So that consultation he was talking about is actually closed now. But there is obviously going to be another formal consultation coming up on it. And a few people did have ideas. I looked at the map. I think the map's still available online to look at what people have suggested, commented on, whatever. Quite a lot of people were looking at things apart from the sports grounds and such like that they were supposed to be looking at. So don't know what they'll do with that. Anyway, as I say, you're listening to Raglan talking to Raglan, and I did have problems with the microphone, but hopefully... I think I'm coming over loud and clear now, so apologies for that, and hopefully it's sorted out. It's now just coming up to 7:25, so maybe it's time to have the bottom of the hour items, and then I'll go and do what I usually do at the start of a show, which is to look at the weather and the news and stuff like that, and then see if we can listen to what's... Oliver McLeod had to say. I think I managed to get through most of that interview last week, but I still had about 10 minutes of it left, so finish that one off. Listen to what Extreme Zero Waste have been up to and see whether we've got time for anything else on Raglan Talking to Raglan. So here goes from the bottom of the hour.
North respect to the Red Robin Reggae Rodeo.
Yeah, you're in the Red Robin's Reggae Rodeo.
This is the Reggae Rodeo every Friday from 6 to 8 with your host Red Robin here out of Raglan. It's a fantastic Friday night.
And let's have a look at what the weather is doing. So the weather is about as cold as it's going to get this evening. I think it's around about 13 degrees going down to 12. And the temperature over the next few days should be somewhere between 5, which is in a couple of days, or a couple of nights' time, rather. Going to be cooler tomorrow night than it is tonight. That's then going up to a maximum of 16, so temperatures ranging between 5 and 16, so not very cold and not at all warm. 1,024 hectopascals is the pressure, which suggests that that rain is moving away. We should probably have a few more showers until the early hours of this morning, and then we should have some dry days through till, I think, Saturday is the next day we're supposed to have some showers. I think probably Monday is going to be showery as well. The wind's supposed to pick up, supposed to be a southwesterly of 25 knots with a southwest swell of 3 meters. The day's still getting longer, of course, so an extra 10 minutes on the morning, so we've now got 6:25 for a sunrise, and an extra 5 minutes on the evening, so we've now got 6:08 for a sunset, so half an hour ago. The things which are on this week, as usual, we've got trivia night on tonight at the Harbour View Hotel, 7 o'clock. Then, of course, there's all the usual things happening, like trivia night and all the other things that happen every week. So if you want to have a look at those, go and have a look at reglandradio.com and look at the What's On tab. And you should see there lots of things happening. But Ragland Ramblers go rambling every week, but it's always a different place each week. So this time they're off to, well, not really off to anywhere, staying in Raglan pretty much, and catching the bus in the middle. It's one way of walking along all the town beaches without actually walking backwards and forwards. So walk to one end of the beach at Raglan West, catch the bus, get off at Lorenzen Bay Road, and walk the rest of the beaches back into town. So that's the plan. Then follow it up with a planning meeting and potluck lunch to work out what to do for the next 6 months. So apart from that, there's also the community board meeting tomorrow afternoon at 1:30. Usually they're in the town hall on Bow Street, but this time they're in the Memorial Hall over at Tuyuku. So the one opposite the shops at Tuyuku and the coffee stop and such like. The roast office, I should say. So that's happening, the public forum, 1:30, sort of two-ish, is the start of the meeting itself. And also starting at 2 o'clock in the community house tomorrow afternoon is Upcycle and Repurpose, a second-hand clothing event being organised there. Moving on to Thursday, then there's a pottery wheel workshop, which is starting for 4 weeks at the old school noon on Thursday. You need to book in for that one, $265 to pay for that one. The old school's also showing films this weekend. So on Friday, they're showing Home Kills, which apparently is fully booked. But they are showing it again on Sunday. So 7:30 on Sunday. If you're not booked in for the one on Friday, apparently Home Kills, it's a Waikato-based film about a home kills business which offers a new service, killing people. So it's supposed to be some sort of comedy, but I'm not quite sure how you turn killing people into a comedy, but no doubt they'll you go along on Sunday evening at 7:30, you might find out. The other films that they're showing are Sitting Duck, which they showed a couple of weeks ago. That's on at 5 o'clock on Saturday, about the whistleblower union rep of a French nuclear power station. 7:30 on Saturday evening, they're showing Ghostlight, where live theatre makes sense of a grieving family tragedy. So they've shown that one before, and Bookworm is also another film that they've shown before, and that's on at 4:30 on Sunday afternoon, about a magician with a precocious daughter who search New Zealand for a mythical black panther. So that's 4:30 Sunday afternoon. Also on Saturday morning, we've got the Repair Cafe again. So that's 10 till noon at the Union Church Hall. I call it Union Church Hall. I'm not quite sure what it's called these days. Maybe it's the Church Hall on Stewart Street. So anyway, 10 till 12 on Saturday for the Repair Cafe. So if you want to get things repaired that have broken and you don't want to throw them away, then that's what it's all about. And the other thing I've got down, probably could talk about it next week, but might be a bit of a rush to get there, so I'll mention it next week as well. But anyway, 7:30 next Tuesday is Tomato Club annual general meeting, and Tomato Club, which is on the road towards the falls. The things which have been in the news this week, I think probably the main thing which changes every 6 weeks is when the Raglan Community Board have a meeting and they produce an agenda which is of varying length. It's a sort of moderate size agenda this time, not very short and not very long. So one of the bits of news from that is that from the end of this month, the 30th of September, we're going to have some more buses. Not an awful lot more buses, but a few more buses. We're going to get 2 buses a day, which are going to not stop at Raglan West, but carry on through to Manu Bay, Waikerie. And we're also going to get an extra bus at weekends, also running through to Waikerie. And that means that if you're catching the bus at weekends for a day trip into Hamilton, you now get an extra hour and 20 minutes there if you want it. Or there's the bus in the middle, which gives you less time if you just want to make a quick trip into Hamilton and back. The last bus, though, still comes back at 3 o'clock. So you can't have a very long time in Hamilton from 10 past 11 till 3 o'clock, instead of from 12:30 till 3 o'clock, which is the current one. But there's also, we were hoping to get a local bus. In fact, you might remember, I've forgotten how long ago it was now. It was when Helen was running the cafe down at the wharf. So it's that long ago. And she was grumbling that she kept losing customers because they couldn't find anywhere to park down at the wharf. So at that stage, the council started looking into this, and they decided the answer was to run a bus down to the wharf so that people could park elsewhere and make their way down to the wharf. And coming out of that was the idea that maybe they could rebuild the wharf. So $6 million later, the wharf has been rebuilt. The bus isn't going to start, because they say that it's unlikely to proceed due to cost and conflict with the existing Raglan shuttle service. And by way of explanation, they've also, this is they being the regional council, they've also written to say that a local bus would be more beneficial to be done by local shuttle companies that were already in operation in the area. Therefore, we have no plans to do anything in this space. And I haven't heard if any of the local shuttle operators are going to start anything, and suggesting that anyone interested might approach them. So it seems a rather odd way around for a regional council that runs the buses to suggest that individuals approach the Raglan shuttle and ask whether they're going to start any buses, because they don't seem to know that Raglan shuttle did indeed try to start a local bus service during the COVID pandemic. They started running buses about every hour, and they charged $5 a ticket for it, and they got very few passengers, which is maybe not surprising, because we did have COVID around at the time, so there were fewer people around. And also $5 is quite a lot to pay for a fare in Raglan, though the current cash fare in Raglan on the current bus is $5, but that's after inflation and after the government's insisting on having a higher return from fares, which is probably going to be counterproductive, but we'll see. So anyway, $5 was quite a lot. There weren't any reduced fares such as there are for the bus ticket, or the B-card ticket rather. And the idea didn't take off. It failed after a few weeks when Raglan Shuttle found that there weren't many people using it. Seems to me that in order for it to work, it does need to have some subsidy and some publicity, because probably not an awful lot of people came across the Raglan Shuttle publicity. It's a lot easier for a district council and a regional council to do publicity than it is for an individual transport firm in a small town. So if it was being promoted and connecting with the bus coming in from Hamilton, it probably worked rather better. Does seem to me that they could save money by not running a big bus out to Waikerie, and that a small bus shuttling between probably the wharf and somewhere out at Whale Bay would probably be a better option. But that's not what they're going for. They're going to spend $58,142 a year on adding to the current contract, which has buses running between Hamilton and Raglan four times a day. And as I say, two of those buses are going to go out to Manu Bay, which wouldn't be too bad if they were running to a sensible timetable, or what I see as a sensible timetable. But one of the problems is that they both the buses going out there are going to run in the morning, which means that if you live out at Manu Bay and Waikerie or somewhere along there, up at Wainui Road, all the other places along there, you could catch the bus into Hamilton. You could have an hour and 19 minutes in Hamilton. Then you need to come back, and you need to pay $12 if you're using a bus card for that. And my guess is that there won't be an awful lot of people keen to spend $12 to have an hour and 19 minutes in Hamilton. So I can't imagine who's going to be using it, especially since the current buses, which run out on summer weekends out to Waikerie, currently have hardly anyone on them. In fact, usually when on the rare occasions I catch it, the only passenger on there, very occasionally there's one or two other people, but certainly not a crowded bus, not even as crowded as the bus between Raglan and Hamilton. So I can't see how that extra $58,000 a year is going to be value for money with that extension. But we'll see whether there's a discussion on it at the community board tomorrow afternoon. I'm also wondering how the Tamahere bus is going, because they did decide that they were going to put on a local bus for Tamahere at the same time that they could have decided to put on a local bus for us. In fact, the district council had $100,000 a year assigned for both Tamahere and for Raglan for the previous 3 years, and somehow that's never come to pass. So the other change they're making is that the last bus is going to come back from town a quarter of an hour later than it does at the moment. Now comes back at 6 o'clock. It's going to be 6:15, which if it ran an extra 3/4 of an hour later would be a good idea, but I can't see the point of running it 1/4 hour later, because if it ran 3/4 hour later, it would actually connect with the bus that runs every day from Wellington, calls at Hamilton and carries on to Auckland, which for backpackers and indeed anybody else who wants to have a low carbon trip between Wellington and Raglan is the way to go. But the trouble is that Intercity, since they've not had any competition from Naked Bus and Mana Bus, have been cutting back on their services. So it used to be possible to leave about 7 or 8 in the morning in Wellington and catch that last bus to Raglan. But for the last few months, they cut out the bus that run the early morning bus that runs on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Saturdays. So the bus from Wellington that does arrives at 6:30 in Hamilton, which is 1/4 hour after the newly retimed bus is going to be starting in September. So again, doesn't make too much sense to me, and whether the community board will talk about it tomorrow remains to be seen. But anyway, there's quite a big report on their agenda tomorrow talking about the new bus, and it is good that we've got some extra buses and that they're running more buses rather than less. But I'm not convinced that it's the best use of $58,000 a year. I'm also going to be, as you might have heard on that interview with Dennis, talking about the Manu Bay breakwater. And as he said, the stakeholder consensus is currently unachievable. And because of this, the current recommendation going to the council will be to not continue the process. Dennis is obviously not happy with that. Whether the rest of the community board will agree with him, I'm not convinced, because at least one of them is a keen surfer. Not quite sure where the rest stand on it, but I'm guessing that the council will be quite keen to save the $2 million that they had earmarked for the work on the breakwater, which is a good reason in these times of constraint to not continue with the process, as they put it. Work is going ahead, though, on the water tower mural. You might have noticed that it's gradually been getting more and more graffiti on the current design on the water tower at the top of Bow Street, and that the attractive design that used to be there is largely not there now. So they've now apparently got a contract with an artist, don't know which artist, and they're also looking at putting lighting there, which they're careful to say is going to be in line with the district plan, which has quite strict regulations on lighting, so they don't cause nuisance to neighbours and they minimise the impact on birds and insects and on putting light into the night sky. So all those things hopefully are going to be covered if they do put lighting there. They're also talking about putting a water fountain there, putting some signs there, 5 signs up, talking about the previous designs that have been on the water tower, talking about the current one and the artist who's doing it, talking about what used to be on the site. So I think it was the site of a redoubt at one time, and then it was owned by one of the councillors of the town, and he donated that site as a park. And now it's got a dirty great water tower stuck in the middle of it. They're also going to be talking about the water, where it comes from, how it's used, how much is used, all that sort of stuff. And they're also hoping to get some sponsors for these signs, so they're going to put them on the 5th sign that they're putting up. And the signs they're aiming for are going to be bilingual, so it should be legible in Tyrael and in English. And they hope all that to be finished by Christmas. So we'll see whether that happens. They're also looking at putting some gardens there as well. So putting some flowers and some native plants generally tidying up the area. There are some designs if you want to have a look either on the Whangarara Environmental Defence Facebook page or rather harder to find. It's in the community board agenda, which you can find by going to the council's website and looking for their meetings and looking down the list of current meetings and clicking on the link that says download content. I think they've made it harder to find these things than it used to be, but I'm not quite sure whether it's supposed to be simpler and whether it's just me that has trouble using them. One of the other things that was discussed at the last community board meeting, which unfortunately I didn't manage to get along to, was no fishing signs at the wharf. I'm not quite sure where they're intending to put these no fishing signs, but apparently they're going ahead with putting them in, so we'll find out. Might be discussion of that tomorrow afternoon. They're also talking about the boat ramp and noting that they've already done half of the new concrete surfacing on the boat ramp at the wharf, and that they're going to do the other half in the middle of this month and hope for it to be fully open again by mid-October. I was interested to see that our councillor was commenting on meeting developers of One Bankart Street. There isn't any detail in the agenda about that, but whether it's going to get discussed, don't know. When I talked to Aaron about it this morning on the morning show, he was saying that he thought the developers were looking for community cooperation in the development, which sounds like it might be a good sign, which is maybe why Lisa was talking to them. This is the development next to Foursquare, between Foursquare and the roundabout on Bow Street. In that area that used to have a tiny batch on it, which was really quite picturesque, but that disappeared over 10 years ago, I think now, well before they built the Foursquare. It's always been a problem on that corner because the road reserve takes up most of that site, so the site actually available for development is relatively small, which maybe explains why the developers want to involve the community in it. The Weir Nearer walkway seems to be on the agenda all the time these days for the community board. So they're pointing out that they've pretty much finished the fencing between the jetty and the footbridge. And they don't mention the lighting, though, because they were going to sort out the lighting along there. And that lighting's had trouble. I think even before they rebuilt the footbridge, and that was back in 2011. So it's a long history of problems with lighting along that stretch of walkway. I suppose now there's a fence to stop you falling in the water, it won't be quite so much of a problem. You'll just bump into the fence if you can't see where you go, rather than fall over the side. And then now, though, looking at the southern end of that, so from the footbridge around to the fire station. And they say that initial geotechnical investigation has been completed and they will explore the different construction options to get the best value for money while ensuring the proposal factors in key items such as limited access for large machinery. So hopefully something's going to go ahead in on that. Does need to, because they did get a report saying that it wasn't going to last much more than 5 years. There's already big holes in it, so hopefully that will happen, and there'll be money for it in the next long-term plan. But probably that's going to be on the agenda for a while longer. Another thing which has been on the agenda for a long time has been civil defence. They've actually published a plan in this agenda. It does say not for public distribution, but there it is in the agenda for the community board for anyone to have a look at. It's labelled a response plan. It's listing hazards. It's got some very brief instructions on what to do about the hazards, like drop and cover. It's got emergency contacts and resources. So if we have a tornado or something, then it gives a list of builders and plumbers and electricians and people like that who might fix up whatever's been affected by that. It's got a map of the tsunami areas, or at least a map of the levels of Raglan. I'm interested to see that they include anything up to a 20-metre tsunami. And if they did have a 20-metre tsunami, then I'm interested to see that the whole of Raglan West would be covered, and that there aren't any areas close to Raglan West which are above 20 metres. So I'm not sure what the plan is there, whether you need to have a long warning to get out of Raglan West if there's a big tsunami coming, or indeed what the probability of it is. Because there was discussion during the meeting on, or the lecture, or what you call it, on Saturday, talking about the new book on the Georgia Carioi, and one of the pages in the book has a map which shows some offshore volcanoes, which apparently were identified by magnetic aerial surveillance when the surveying was being done to find out how much iron sand we've got off the coast. So it not only showed where the iron sand was, but it also showed where these probably dormant volcanoes are, somewhere around the area of Karewa, which you might know as Gannet Island. So the island about, 18 kilometres off the coast, and clustered around there are quite a few other volcanic cones. Karewa itself is relatively new in geological terms, much newer than Carioi. Carioi is about 2.5 million years old. Karewa is probably the order of 100,000 years old. I think the only thing that's been done in the way of studying those volcanoes has been to put them on the map in the Karioi geology book that's just been produced, on the basis of the magnetic survey that was done for the iron sands. There were reports in the press. It's always hard to know how reliable they were, or whether it was to sell newspapers at the time, but around about 1800, there were quite a few reports of volcanic activity in that area. And there was reports of a few earthquakes as well. So presumably, rather like Christchurch, that could happen again. Hopefully one of the things that might follow up with the civil defence plan is to look at whether there is a likelihood of a 20-metre tsunami. But anyway, it's on the map. So presumably there's some thought that that is a possibility. And if it is, let's say, some thought needs to be put into what happens, particularly in Raglan West. The rest of us have got hills which are more than 20 metres high that we could go up if we got enough notice. But anyway, there's going to be another meeting, as well as discussing the civil defence plan tomorrow afternoon at the Community Board. There's going to be a meeting in the second week of October, which it says is to finalise the plan and to get volunteers willing to put in time to be trained, so that when some civil defence emergency comes, they can respond when required. Sound Splash is another item which keeps popping up on the agenda these days. Apparently they're going to carry on with the improvements that they made last year, or at the beginning of this year, for the 2025 events. So they're going to carry on with the buses from Auckland and Hamilton, the improvements in shade, and the faster processing at the security check-in, which all seemed to work well this time, and we didn't end up with the same traffic jams or the people complaining about how they were almost suffering from heat stroke or things like that. They say that the council staff are still working on options for fees to charge Sound Splash. So that's probably also get discussed tomorrow afternoon at the Community Board, which, as I say, is in Tuku and not in the town hall here in Raglan. Closed circuit television has been on the agenda also for a long time. We were told at one stage that we had two closed circuit TVs here in Raglan, But we haven't so far had them working properly, as far as I know. And the latest report from the council says that they are gathering data from the police to help with prioritisation of the cameras, which suggests that they don't have enough of them to put them everywhere that people want them. So not sure what's going to end up with that one. So no doubt that will be on the agenda for a while longer as well. As will the Greenslade Road Reserve Playground, which they are going to share updates with the stakeholders. Council seems to love this word, stakeholders, these days. So everything's discussed with stakeholders, which seem to be the people that it suits council to talk to. But maybe that's a cynical way of looking at it. There's also no details about community board plans. The community board seems to think they've got a plan. The council seems to think that they ought to do one. So they're going to present the community board with what the council's doing, which is called Our Plan, which is apparently a presentation on customer service, costs, safety, risks, and things like that. And also, there is mention of a Raglan community plan meetings, and I'm not too sure what that is. So again, maybe we go along tomorrow afternoon and find out. The campground, they seem to be getting on with the stormwater project. Last time I went there a couple of days ago, they had a digger and a whole load of pipes piled up, quite big pipes and almost big enough to crawl through. And they say that works will begin, done by a firm called GT Civil, who's got the contract for it. So works will begin on the 2nd of September, so that's just over a week ago, and include the installation of temporary fencing to allow for installation of the first manholes and the laying of the stormwater pipes. But the cost was well above the estimates that they had, and so they're only going to go ahead with the stormwater works and the pumping station, and roading, which apparently they were also going to do, is going to be deferred. So one of the problems, as you might have heard in that interview with Aaron talking to Dennis, was that it's hard to know quite what these things are, because the campground committee isn't exactly forthcoming and telling us what's going on over there. And the other thing that I spotted on the community board that's maybe worth a brief mention is the discretionary fund. So this is the fund that the council has for handing out money to good causes. And every year they give the community board $14,271 to top up their fund. I don't think it increases with inflation. It seems to have been about that level for years now. And they say that they haven't finished doing their sums on it either, because they say carry forwards are yet to be updated. But as far as I can make out, the community board rather overspent last year. So that's about 14,000. It's got about 10,000 left. And they've also decided to go back to the system of having applications every 3 months rather than every 6 weeks. So no doubt we'll hear more about that at the community board tomorrow afternoon. I did have somebody grumbling that they could never get along to the community board meetings because they're during the day. If you are thinking, well, I can't get along either, maybe you'd like to tell the community board that you would like to go along, but that you can't get there. Because every other community board in the Waikato district holds its meetings at 6:30 in the evening, and Raglan is the only community board in the whole of Waikato district that holds its meetings in the afternoon on a weekday, which for those who aren't retired or able to take leave easily, then it's not very convenient. So let's have a look at what the news there is apart from the community board. So there's the sad story of the man, what's this, 5 days ago, I think, 6 days ago, who was walking down the middle of the main road and killed. A man died after being hit by a vehicle while walking his dog near Raglan. Emergency services were called near the intersection of the main road and Nomai business estate shortly before 7 p.m. on Wednesday. The man was found dead. It's understood the dog was unharmed, and police want to hear from anyone who may have seen the man and the dog between 4:30 and 7, or who captured dash cam footage. And they say vehicles of interest are a 2009 Ford Falcon Saloon, registration FDF332, and a 2011 silver Mazda XLR, registration PZD720. And they also were saying that, a day later, they said that it was Steve Cranston, age 43, who was hit when, and they were still trying to understand exactly what happened, because Stephen was a farm manager at Eureka near Hamilton, walking his dog through Raglan on Wednesday afternoon. Understood he walked across the Winery Road one-lane bridge in the middle of the road, holding up traffic on both sides. And a resident who did not want to be named said she understood a call was first made to police at 4:30, reporting him in the middle of the main road, and said that she was returning from Hamilton just before 5:30 when she came across him near Greenslade Road. She rang the 111 number immediately and reported the sighting, and said that cops were around. There's no way they could have not passed him, and was later told that a friend had claimed that they'd flagged down one of the patrol cars to report the problem. And there were other calls made to the police, apparently. Police said in a statement that emergency services were called shortly before 7 p.m. When they located a man deceased, though the dog survived. The woman said news of the collision was posted on Facebook, and she rang 111 for a third time and told the operator this has happened because you guys didn't get anyone here in time, and has lodged a complaint with the Police Conduct Authority. Yesterday, police said they'd launched an investigation and that there would be a formal identification, and a number of people are currently assisting with our inquiries. But they're still asking for that dash cam footage. And there's also a report, this was from Radio New Zealand, RNZ, saying that Bradley Cranston of Whangarei confirmed it was his brother who died, and said details were sparse and confused. That Stephen worked as a farm management consultant at AgFirst, but left there in 2016, started his own business, Steve Cranston Consulting. And Bradley said his brother went to Carmel High School, had been managing a farm, and became passionate about advocating for farmers. He liked fighting for farmers, and there weren't a lot of people doing it, but I think it was a really important thing, and he was actually doing some good work there. Also had political aspirations when at one point he was a candidate for Democracy NZ, and a member of Groundswell. And his brother described him as a social guy who had a good sense of humour and was in sports, playing rugby and later cycling and tennis, and also surfing. And was also saying that he had a few questions about the circumstances of the death. I can't get my head around why he was walking where he was. Like, why would you drive out to Raglan and then start walking back into town? Police state spokesperson said they received a number of reports from 5 p.m. of a man seen walking with a dog on the main road. And then there was another story also in on our report, covered by a few medias. Coverage and RNZ was one of them, saying that the stories had been that he was described as a champion for farmers, dedicating to advocating for farmers' rights. So it's a very similar story to what I've already read out. So that's the sort of really bad news for the week, I suppose. Still a mystery. It's also the rates rising every year and growing council debts. So there was a meeting on Friday about that one. It was interesting that there weren't all that many people along there. So I think they talk of a mass revolt is rather optimistic, probably. The other story that I spotted was Karioi Volcano book launch, a huge success. This is from Raglan 23. Roger was along there at the meeting together with a huge number of other people. Had over 100 attending, according to Roger, in the Stuart Street Church Hall, which was packed as much as it could be. They were along to listen to geologist Dr. Oliver McLeod describe how his new book weaves together Kororo and local Maturaya Maori and geological science, and saying he's traversed the slopes of Karioi over the last few years, met its people, listened to their stories, and the result is a remarkable book which plots the geology and whakapapa of Karioi, called The Geology of Karioi Volcano. And there's also the exhibition still on until Thursday, I think it is, at the old school, 10 till 2 each day, which has things like some of the old wood, which apparently has been preserved since more than 2.5 million years ago. The lava flowed out of the volcanoes over the top of the wood and covered it in lava and ash, and the charred remains are still there to look at it in the exhibition at the old school. So I think that covers the things which have been on this week. We've now got to, we've got 17 minutes past seven, so maybe we've got to the top of the hour items, having had the bottom of the hour items. So then we'll see how much we can fit in after that. Probably not all that much, but we'll see how we go.
Kia ora whangaroa, this is your Captain Barlow inviting you to check out our new amphibious sea legs vessel, Waka Huia. That's right. You can visit a unique spot for a picnic anywhere in the harbour and you won't even get your feet wet. Or you can zip around behind the boat on our water toys if that's more your style. Cruise through parts of our beautiful harbour you've never seen, like Orkete Falls, the Narrows, or Shagtree. Or head across the bar to the open coast. Go to raglanboatcharters.co.nz to learn more about Waka Huia and to book a trip.
Kia ora, Aaron.
So we're not. Raglan Fish is giving away corn fritters all through winter. If you order a meal deal online or in person, Monday to Friday, you'll get a corn fritter for free. All you need to do is order a meal deal via the link on the Raglan Fish Facebook page, or head on down to the wharf at the end of Wallace Street to make your order. See you at the wharf. Raglan Community Radio supports the Raglan Food Bank.
The food bank can be found at 36 Bow Street opposite the Community House and is open for business between 1 and 3 Mondays and Fridays.
Donations can be dropped off at these times or at Super Value.
Check out the food bank's current needs on our sign at the Super Value entrance or online at surfside.co.nz.
Or find out more about the Surfside Community Services, Food Bank and Counselling Services by phoning 825 5199.
The Raglan Food Bank. Raglan's only true community bank.
From 1994 to 2024, this is Raglan Community Radio.
Our station, 98.1 FM, is celebrating its 30th year on air.
To our past and present DJs, sponsors, listeners and supporters, we say thank you.
Thank you. 98.1,
the best in the West.
Raglan Community Radio, at the heart of your community for 30 years.
Tune in and chill out.
And that brings us to almost 20 past nine, which gives time to have the last 10 minutes of the talk, which I didn't manage to fit in last week, from Oliver McLeod talking about that Carioi map.
Collapse, a sector collapse of the mountain.
And it's, but it's an amphitheatre now.
It's an amphitheatre.
I think that's the word you used.
Caused by a massive landslide that happened a long time after Carioi finished erupting.
The thing I don't understand, like, it's, I mean, it's not perfectly vertical, but it's pretty much a vertical cliff.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Like, how does a landslide stop with such a perfect vertical cliff?
Well, it's like a horseshoe-shaped or a U-shaped collapse scarp. And the...
Oh, so that's the collapse line.
Yeah, the head of the scarp tends to be about vertical, and then it sort of bottoms out and it rotates. And so all of that material's, well, most of it is now offshore.
Yeah.
And there's several examples of those around the coast of Carioi. And by the way, on the map...
Yeah, what have we got? Like, well, Whale Bay, six, seven... Of eight of them or something like that?
Yeah, so the areas...
Oh, and around Ruapoki as well. I haven't even seen that.
Both Manu Bay and Whale Bay are collapse scarps. That's why they're nice. That's why we have a lagoon at Whale Bay.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a chunk of the mountain that's fallen out. And then Manu Bay as well. You know, you've got a fairly flat amphitheatre-like structure above the surf break, and that's another one of these. It's a smaller one, but it's another one.
And we've got sea cliffs that rock climbers like as well.
Yeah.
There's actually a lot for rock climbers around here, which I don't know if you've met Gareth on Raglan Rock. He'd probably be quite enthusiastic about.
He'd be good to chat to.
Yeah. The information. He loves rocks. So, folks, we're talking to Dr. Oliver McLeod, who's just produced his map and book, Geology of Carioi Volcano. And you are doing now. When is the book launch? It's on the 7th of September.
Yep, 11 a.m. And that's at the Stewart Street Hall.
Yeah, and so, but the people, the patrons. What do you call the people who
have maps unfolded for the wall? Right,
pristine. Yes, yeah. That sounds
in a
good
map tube. Yeah,
Are you into signing your?
I definitely can sign the books. The crowdfund one for sign.
Okay.
So, if people want that, definitely can do that.
Okay. As New Zealanders, we're not very good at, like, putting ourselves out like that. So.
Yeah,
but some people may or may not want that to happen. And what happens with this now, like, can people can enjoy it and they enjoy to know about the area that they live. Is it useful for things as well? Like, it's not like we want to exploit the mountain. That's the last thing that's going to be happening, but, well, hopefully.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what do we do with the information? Or what do you do, or the science community do?
So for the general public, I hope it strikes up inspiration to visit all of these amazing geological sites in Lemonga and the surrounding landscape. You know, I hope it inspires young people to do their own environmental-based research. I hope that it opens doors in terms of collaboration and dialogue between science and Mātauranga Māori, which is a whole aspect of this project I haven't touched on much here. But
So that was like source information or original information for you as well?
Yeah, and a kind of emphasis on whakapapa as a way of understanding landscapes, and which also brings in people and their connection to place.
Yeah.
So kind of going beyond traditional geoscience into people and place. And so I really hope that the work has some impact in that space. In the international science context, you know, I've got a lot of work to do to tour this map around in the Americas. That's all coming up next year.
So you're hoping to go over there, or are we zooming?
No, I'll be in person, yeah.
Okay.
And
do you get, like, invited to do things like that once you've done some work? Like,
you do. You get invitations, and, you know, I've seen similar examples of this kind of volcanism in Mexico, for instance, and so maybe there'll be comparative or case studies to be done. You know, Carioi is one example, and maybe another from Mexico or elsewhere in North America. there's probably more papers to write, you know, in the academic journals. And the thing is with a map is there is so much now that has to be unpacked. So you present the map and then there's a pause.
Yeah.
Thinking, what does all this actually mean? Because I've just mapped out where everything occurs.
Yeah.
But now what's the story that tells in terms of how magmas have travelled through the crust below Kariyoi? Why is the distribution significant of the arc and intraplate rocks? There's also cultural aspects of the story to explore. For instance, all of the pā that have been mapped out on top of sand dunes or volcanic features. You know, what's all that about? What's the distribution of those? There's so many angles that can come off this. There's actually probably decades of spin-off research that can come from it.
Yeah.
Whether it's me or others, you know.
There's some PhD students coming through, some master students coming through now potentially.
Well, it'll be good, but there aren't that many masters and PhDs in local geoscience right now.
Okay.
So, but you know, 30 years down the line, there might be another wave or...
So is there, at Waikato University, is there a department or a...
Yeah. Yeah, we have... there's a geoscience kind of department.
Yes.
And geoscience is just in a kind of retreating space right now. So this work is kind of a bit of an anomaly.
Yeah. Like you said at the start, the Kickstarter was a key to making it happen.
That's also why I feel a bit of a responsibility to put in a good word for... You know, for geoscience, because it is getting hammered.
Yeah, our universities there's a whole discussion there about how universities have been turned into certificates for meal tickets, like, as opposed to places of research and learning and investigation and that sort of thing over the last, it's 30 years, over 30 years since I was at university, exactly 30 actually, thinking about it. Anyway, that was just the start of that change back then.
Yeah.
And we used to have the DSIR. You're probably too young to remember the DSIR.
I'm too young to remember it myself, but I've got colleagues.
I don't feel like I do remember it myself. I just know it was a thing that was stopped in the 90s, I think. So.
Right.
Yeah, and where research and knowledge was, you didn't have to be able to point to a profit or something like that. It was known to be useful for its own, I don't know, it was just a different attitude toward that. You might do research, you might not know what it could be used for, and then 20 years later somebody might use it for something like,
and you know, I guess that's the kind of spirit or the philosophy that the Kariyoi map came from. It's, and that's what makes it kind of a bit of an anomaly, is that I don't think there are many scientists who could justify spending 4 years mapping in this way. And so that's why, again, you know, I think all the supporters of the work, because That's how this happened. It's this would not be funded in university. There's just no way now.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's an example of when the community backs a scientist, you can still create these bubbles of meaningful kind of grassroots research, you know, primary level research. But it's these are becoming pretty rare now.
Well, times will change too. I mean, one day attitudes might change again.
Yeah.
So it's time for us to wrap up. Just remind people that the book launch with Oliver,
everything for an hour, it's going to be much more interactive and a reflection on whakapapa Māori, on geoscience, the past, present and future of Kariyoi. And we're approaching it from that angle. We're going to be, you know, inclusive. We're going to, it's multidisciplinary.
When it's just you and me anyway.
Exactly.
That's going to be part of that. Oh, that sounds excellent. Look, thank you for coming in this morning. I assume you've taken a little bit of time off work.
Yeah.
But this is much more important. So,
yeah, thank you, Aaron.
Glad you could do it. Thanks for coming in, Oliver.
So, if you have been, thanks for listening to Raglan Talking to Raglan. And I did mean to mention, after we heard from Dennis, that the Friends of Wainui didn't actually object to the cycle track, and what they said was that we aren't speaking for all the other users of the Wainui Bush Park, and therefore can't say yay or nay, which seems to have come over as a council report of saying nay. But again, we might find out more about that tomorrow afternoon at the community board meeting. So I hope you might most join me next week, 6-ish till 7:30-ish, it now being 10 seconds to 7:30 rather. We've got some music lined up in 44th Calibre. And let's see if we can get that working.